Hey, welcome to Visionary Womenpreneurs Radio. I'm your host, Donna Lynn Price with Compass Rose Consulting, and I am thrilled that you're here today. Today we have a great guest, but first I want to just tell you a little bit about Visionary Womenpreneurs Radio, where we are interviewing women that inspire us, women that are visioning with purpose, leading with connection and collaboration, strategizing to have an impact on the world, their world, their family, their community, and the world, taking consistent action to make it happen, taking on challenges and learning from them and celebrating their successes. Visionary Womenpreneurs focus on womenpreneurship, empowering women and girls, ending poverty, youth education, earth stewardship, health and well-being, and social justice. And we're thrilled to have another visionary womanpreneur with us today. Jessica Mead is a, we're going to be talking with her about women in business and parenting and education in today's time. She has been homeschooling for over a decade and has become one of the foremost experts in alternative, supplemental, and customized education. Not your typical stay-at-home mom, she's seldom seen without her children as she homeschools them full-time, pioneering curriculum that is enviable by both traditional teachers and alternative education experts. While fully dedicated to her children's education, she's the founder and CEO of BrandLink, a managing partner of Drivonic, we'll have to make sure I pronounce that right, and the co-founder of the Epic Companies and Mead Holdings Group, with a combined valuation toppling $100 million and a portfolio of angel investments that encompass more than 20 companies. She's been featured alongside Richard Branson, Shaquille O'Neal, publications like Forbes and Entrepreneur Money. This Disney fan turned helicopter pilot and emerging millennial mom influencer is both as a business mentor and a pioneer of intentionally designed life plans. Regularly, Jessica is asked to comment on the power of the female investing dollar, public school reform, homeschooling your children while advancing your own career, and how to scale companies from inside out without giving up control. With two amazing children, a 20-year marriage, and more than 20 companies in her business portfolio, and an emerging women's empowerment movement appropriately titled Still Orbiting, Jessica excludes business and life mastery. I am thrilled today to welcome Jessica Mead to the show. Great. Jessica, welcome to Visionary Womenpreneurs Radio. We are so excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So going through your intro is just so impressive, all that you've accomplished and all that you've done in your life and the businesses that you've created, all just very impressive. But I guess I wondered, like, what was the first idea, the first thing that got you started, that first vision that put you on a path of becoming an entrepreneur, a womanpreneur?
Okay, so this is a really good question, and I'm just going to give you my truth here with this answer.
Great.
Growing up, my parents, my stepdad and my mom, they were entrepreneurs, and they were really bad at it. They'd always try something and fail, and as a family, we would suffer. We wouldn't have a home. We'd live in our car, storage, whatever, you know, wherever. And so my idea of becoming an entrepreneur was very skewed. I did not want to be one. I was going to go to school and have this great career, family, and feel very stable and safe. So when you ask me that question, I have to admit that I didn't go into life thinking that was ever a possibility for me. I believe in myself. I had a lot of confidence and courage and all the things that's necessary to embrace entrepreneurialism. But what it was my husband, just a guy that I knew, he kind of drug me into it, kicking and screaming. He... he showed me that I had this massive potential, and he's 4 years older than I am. So he was already working at establishing his career. He had a small publishing company, and he just kind of drugged me along, and I got into it, and I was able to insert myself into his business and kind of analyze it and see the areas where it needed help. We got into expanding, and I was able to see how that could work for us. I helped him see that he wasn't quite doing his taxes right and how he could grow his business. So there was a lot of things that I brought to the table that maybe he didn't see, because he's a massive visionary and great at selling, best salesman I've ever known. But he kind of drugged me into it. So I have to be fair and say that I didn't go into it on my own. He brought me into it.
Well, that's very cool. But it sounds like a working partnership that really you both enhance your success.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's what makes every company that we build or acquire, grow. That's the magic, is he and I, how we work together, what we bring to the table. It's different from each other, and how we see things and line that up to make it really work.
So I was looking on your website, and there's a timeline, like a really nice images of like your timeline. Uh-huh. And I know that today we were going to talk about women in business and parenting. So parenting came down the timeline a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Right? So you're a homeschool mom and a business womanpreneur, a business owner. So how did that, because it sounds like you do a lot for homeschooling and parenting. So let's talk about like that transition and like what made you decide that as an entrepreneur, you also wanted to be a homeschooler.
So when Matt and I decided we were going to have kids, we at that point had been together about 6 years. So we had quite a bit of time to build our relationship as well as our career. We've been together 22 years, been working together 21, and married 19. So we've had quite a good run so far together. But
yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. When we decided to have children, we kind of sat down and really talked about what our goals for that would be, how we wanted to raise our children, like what our ideal approach was going to be for that, which is a little weird, you know, in your 20s to have that conversation. But being the oldest of seven in a blended family, and being a caregiver at a very young age, I knew all the things I did and didn't want to do. I knew the way I wanted to raise my children. And he put a lot of faith and trust in me that I, you know, just kind of let me guide that ship, and he would follow along and help me and enhance that along the way. But what had us deciding to homeschool, our daughter was in this little private school in Clear Lake, Texas. It's called the Lab School. And the reason why we had picked that was that it was Monday through Thursday, 9 to 1. So we didn't lose her for the whole day, but she could go and engage. And this school was phenomenal. And honestly, had that school survived past that 2008 recession, 2008, 2009, she may have stayed there as long as they only went to fourth or fifth grade. Yeah. But they called me and said, hey, we can't make enrollment. You've got to do something. And at that moment in my life, I was pregnant with Jackson. This was August. Jackson was born August 29th. And then my grandmother lived with us full care in our home. She had had a stroke and kind of moved around from relative to relative and ended up being really comfortable with us. So we took care of her last 3.5 years of her life. So I was terrified. I panicked. I said, what am I going to do? And the lady that owned the school, she also taught at University of Houston, Clear Lake there. She said, just homeschool her. You're not going to ruin her. She's a brilliant child. I can help you figure it out. And I honestly was terrified. I didn't know what I was going to do. But that was the biggest blessing for us, because what I realized, this massive gift I was being given, that I could not only educate her, but really follow through on our plans to raise this global citizen and instill in her all the things that we see missing in society and with employees that we have that growing, getting into adulthood, because at that time we had employees that were also in high school as well. We had a chain of restaurants. So we dealt with all sorts of people. Yeah. And the things you notice that are missing, you go, oh gosh, I want to make sure my child knows that. Or man, they've got to have a solid financial foundation, emotional intelligence, all these things, life skills, basic life skills, all of that, you know, they're so important. So that's really, and from that moment on, I've been homeschooling.
That's wonderful. And so I think most people listening would think, well, how do you balance that homeschooling and running multiple companies and being involved in multiple companies? How do you find the time to do that?
Well, I think having a really good grasp on your expectations and your allowance of where your time goes and how it's used is extremely important. So for me, like now, this is running a little bit into my school time with my kiddos. But for me, it's those first 4 or 5 hours of my day until they get up. See, they don't start their day until about 10:30, 11 o'clock, because there's no need to. We're not on anybody else's schedule. Yeah. We've figured out a schedule that works for us. And now, of course, we're all working from home. So with us, I do this pocket of work in the morning, and then I'm with my kids for the whole afternoon into early evening. And then I follow up for about an hour or so with my work towards the end of the day. And I'm just really good at managing my time. Our employees know that I'm strict. I have hard stops where you need to accomplish things. We do a lot via different work apps and things that we have. So I think that being very mindful of that, and also setting the allowance and expectations with the people that work with you, so they're aware of that as well. Because you will find time bandits, whether it's projects or people, and they will talk and talk and talk. And then the next thing you know, you just lost an hour and a half. Right. I'm also very strict on multitasking. I don't multitask in business. I find that it kills creativity and productivity. You're really into something and you walk away to start something else. You're trying to do two or three things at a time, and you're not really getting anything accomplished, and you're not putting your full self into it to just get it done and move on. So I find that I'm really strict on that as well.
Yeah, I found that, well, being that we're still in COVID, and my kids, one's in college now, but I have a high schooler, and I knew this before all of this, but she goes to a traditional high school, but school doesn't have to take that full 7 hours that they're in the building.
Exactly.
And, now they're doing the hybrid thing, and they're requiring them to be on their computer for that full 7 hours, which is tiring.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's tiring and frustrating to her and boring. And I tried to homeschool, but they just didn't want to do it at the time. So if I was doing it all over again, I would probably homeschool, just because I think you can bring in so much creativity and have freedom to like go to the place that you're learning about, or go out and do a field trip, or be outside and not just tied to computer or the desk in the classroom. So
that's the frustrating part, is I've had a lot of people want to talk to me about tips for homeschooling right now. I'm like, ladies and gentlemen, this is not homeschooling. This is distant learning. There's a huge difference. You're following somebody else's curriculum. It's not one you've created or purchased, or a hybrid of whatever type of homeschooling you're doing. This is busy work at home. They got to keep you on for 7-8 hours, especially these elementary kids that are doing this. It blows my mind. Like, what is the purpose of that? The purpose is you have to be on for so many hours for funding. Yeah, so I understand it, but I think that it's not really doing the kids any good. And for parents, it's kind of leaving this bad taste in their mouth about homeschooling, you know, because that's what they think this is. And really, homeschooling is such a gift. For us, it takes about 2 hours a day. Yeah. But what I try to explain to people, and what we travel a whole lot, we take our education on the road. My kids have been to 29 countries. We go to the museums and the different parts of the culture that we connect with. Wherever we go, we immerse ourselves in the language, in the food, in the environment, in the people. Yeah. And to me, that's better education than you can get anywhere else. I mean, you have the opportunity with homeschooling to create it however you want to see it on your own schedule without rushing. You know, kids, a lot of studies are showing now that kids are so overworked. Like, why are kids so overworked? They're kids. They get to play. But honestly, you know, now they have homework that they have to get done. And when they get home from school, it's mixed in with all these extracurricular activities that we feel the need to put them in so many to set them up for sports or music or whatever it is that, you know, now you have to have those extra things in order to get into the right schools. And then there's homework and you have this tiny window of family time, and then they're rushed to bed and woke up in the way. Their health is not what it needs to be. So I say, let them rest. Work out a family schedule that works best for you, and, you know, enjoy the journey, because then they grow up and they move on.
I think people are so scared that their kids aren't going to get, like, what they need to get into college or whatever, that they, even homeschoolers that I see, buy into a curriculum where I'll say, well, let's go and do this field trip. And they're like, oh, no, we have to, like, we've got school. It's like, but you're homeschooling. How could you, like, not be?
Like, you're missing the point.
Why can't we go kayaking? Like, why?
Well, I have to tell you, when I had decided to homeschool Isabella, we did not start until October because I gave birth, and, you know, it was just, it was a really rough time to immerse ourselves in something. And I too was one of those parents that was scared to death that I was going to mess her up. So I bought into that. I tried to take traditional school and bring it home and follow that, where we were there at 8 o'clock in the morning. We worked till 3. I filled her day full of a purchase curriculum to where there was accountability in my mind. So there was no way I could screw her up. And I had this breakdown, like, towards the end of finishing that year of school, where I just was crying and crying, and I couldn't figure out, like, what am I doing? I'm taking this opportunity and this gift, and all I've done is brought it home, and I'm doing the same thing. So it really shifted my mind, and I saw all of the brilliance in homeschooling and what it could be. I invested time into learning the different styles and kind of figured out what worked best for us. I figured out my child's learning style, which is extremely important, because I think one of the problems parents have and why they don't want to homeschool is they're like, man, you know, when my child brings home homework, we fight. We do not get along. It's arguing. And I don't want to do that all day with my kiddo. And it's just because when they drop them off at school, the teacher is teaching them, has invested in figuring out how to best teach your child. You need to do that as well. Just because you're their parent doesn't mean you know how to teach them or educate them. So taking the time to figure out how they learn best is very vital to making that work.
Yep. Definitely. And I love that you've made that shift for your kids. And it seems like it fits with your creativity just in all the businesses that you're creating. And it makes it, like, more authentically who you are to achieve from that perspective. But we all get caught up in these, like, rules that we think there are on how we have to do something. And for kids, we're always, like, preparing them for this next thing.
Like, exactly. I was just about to say that.
The high school is constantly talking about, well, in college, and it's like, just let them be in high school. They're just in high school right now.
Exactly.
About, like, what happens in college. And, like, we're doing this, you know, we have these rules because it's going to be like that in college. And it's like,
oh, sure. And right now, a big question is, well, what about all these high school students that are preparing for college? You know, we're failing them. And I'm like, guys, you know, everybody understands that we have these circumstances that were out of our control. They're not making kids submit SAT or ACT tests because a lot of kids can't take them in their state. They're making these allowances. And honestly, colleges were moving away from those to begin with because they're not, they are a measure of knowledge, but it's not the exact measurement moving into college. Yeah. I mean, I get this question a lot. It's like, oh, how are your kids going to go to college? And like, same way your kids are going to college. I mean, with the transcript and, you know, if there's tests that are required, but my kids are going to go and they're going to be very self-driven. They're going to be motivated to get their work done if they choose to go to college. In other countries, and I think this is just brilliant, at about 15 or 16, high school sort of ends and they do two to three years of an apprentice type learning environment and in the area they want to go into. I think we send these kids to college. And now, you know, I know since I was in high school, there were some classes that are geared towards a field I want to go into, but not to the extent that a lot of these other countries are doing. And I think it's brilliant because I think we lose kids at some point. And that's why, you know, they may not want to go to college or they might not find the value in it. And so, and I think it should be per kid and what their goals are. There's a lot of families I know, they're like, oh no, you are going to college. You know, and I'm thinking that's, you know, with our kids, it's always been, Matt and I agreed on this early on, the money is there for them if they want to go to college. If they don't want to go to college, if it doesn't align with where they want to head in their future, what their goals are, they can use that money to start a business. And so it's an option. And I think kids should have that option.
I agree. And there's very successful people that didn't go to college.
Like absolutely.
Not you're guaranteed a success that you go to college. So we said similar things, like you can go to college, but you don't have to go to college. Like you can succeed in life not going to college. So
I have so many employees that work for me and they're not even using what they went to college for. You know, I think part of that period of your life is also self-discovery of like, okay, you know what? Turns out I really love, you know, designing. It turns out I really love, you know, right. Whatever it could be.
Yeah.
To have it figured out and to invest that much money and to put our kids in debt from early on, just, it scares me. It scares me that that's what we're teaching them to do.
Definitely. Yeah. Our daughter did a gap year last year. So she went and lived in Ecuador and participated in a gap year program. And that was really helpful for her. One, she's a young, she would have been just turning 18 when she got to college. So she's always been like the youngest in the class. So it gave her a year to kind of catch up with where everybody else is.
I love that.
But yeah, she lived on her own and I mean, with a family, but all of a sudden it was more independent than here. And in a foreign country and
figured out things about herself that she, you know, she may not have understood. And I mean, it probably changed the way she viewed her life moving forward. I think that's such a great gift to be able to do that. You know, that's also why I think when Matt and I are working with people for investing, hiring, doesn't matter. We, you know, we invest in people. We don't invest in them based on the skills that they acquired in school or their degree. We talk to them and get to know them and see if they're a good fit in that way, because anybody can come in and learn your processes, your programs, whatever it is that you do in your company, you can teach them. Sometimes those are the best employees that don't come in biased based on how they've done it before, how they see something should be going.
Yep, definitely. So let's kind of shift back to entrepreneurship. And how does motherhood make you a better entrepreneur, investor? Like, how does that side of you impact your business?
That's a really good question. I think I don't turn myself on and off based on which hat I'm wearing. Yeah. I think I stay very genuine to who I am and how I treat people and I approach situations. Working with all age groups in the restaurant business, I always tell everybody, it taught me a lot about people and different personalities. And it made me invest in learning about birth order and love languages and how to pull out the best parts of those different types of personalities so that I could work with them better. And I think that prepared me for children a little bit, because my kiddos are very, very different. The way they learn is completely different. Their personalities, I have, you know, just, you know how you'll hear those stories where one is this quiet, sweet, kind of reined in child, and then the other one is like fireworks. Yeah. That's my life. So I think I think it worked both ways. I think being a businesswoman and an entrepreneur helped me with relationships and communication skills. And I realize a lot of times too with parents, they kind of have these two different personas that go on. And I think that's hard because if you don't find a good blend, especially being an entrepreneur, of how to approach everybody, it's exhausting, and you can't maintain that. So when I am talking to somebody who works for me versus my child, if it's about a task or communication, I think I approach it the same way. You know, I've never had to separate it. It's never felt like a necessary thing for me. It's always been more comfortable to just be me, how I view I should approach a problem or a task and move forward from there.
Well, you said something a while ago about emotional intelligence, and that seems like a key in communicating in a workplace and with our kids, and operating from that place where you're a good communicator at work, but all, you know, your kids are becoming good communicators and emotionally solid, you know, but then it sounds like you're also doing that with your employees and helping them to do that better.
Sure. I think it's extremely important. Everything is based on communication and the relationships you build, especially in business. If you're not good at that and you're not, I talk a lot about listening. Yeah. So I have this thing, and I, especially my management team, I always encourage them to pay attention to the words that people are using, how they're using those words in a sentence, the words that they choose to use, the inflection in their voice, and how you listen to that. I think people in conversations, they don't actually listen. They hear one or two things that the first few words that somebody is saying, and then they're trying to figure out their response. They're trying to figure out how to connect to keep this conversation going, but they fail to listen to the whole delivery of what that person was saying. And so they're missing all the key things that build that connection and that foundation in a relationship. So I'm always working on that with my staff. To be better listeners and communicators. And same with my children. Our kids are massive negotiators. We've taught them to be, because that is life as an adult. You're constantly negotiating everything. Our son, he just paid off his loan. He took out a loan to buy this new bike. He had left his bike out and his bike went missing. So I said, okay, buddy, you know, you want a new bike right now. You got to buy a bike. Well, he had started this little recycling business, and so he was making money, and he decided he was going to go buy his own bike rather than wait for a birthday or something. And so he just paid that off. And through that, you know, he negotiated his interest terms. He understood good debt versus bad debt, that he had to pay his payment by a certain time. So he had to make sure that he was going, meeting up with his business partner, Jose, getting the best rate for his different types of recycling. He has people in our office in Phoenix collecting recycling. The lady who cuts my son and my husband's hair. So he's struck these deals with everybody to up his volume, to get his bike paid off faster. You know, and he started this at 8, you know, and so teaching them all of these things and the value of it, and placing a positive mindset, a growth mindset on money, financial literacy, and all aspects of it, as well as the emotional intelligence, the self-love, and the courage and the confidence. And he get frustrated because he thought he was going to earn more, and to not attach a negative emotion to money. Yeah. Because I think as adults, We've kind of been trained to do that in a lot of ways. And so we've worked really hard to not attach those negative emotions to money with him, and show him the positive side to it and keep that momentum going. So there's a lot of things that you can do, that you can blend with how you raise and educate your children as well as your employees. I have a book coming out. It's actually called Firework Humans, and it's about the 9 entrepreneurial instincts as I see them, my interpretation of them, and what they mean. And I kind of break it down by each instinct and how they apply both to my employees and my children and my life in general, and how I don't separate that and how it's a continuous blend. And so therefore, I'm not creating that, that cutoff between.
Yeah. Well, why don't you tell us a couple of those from your book? I actually have your book up on my screen. I was looking at your website. It looks great.
Oh, is it on there? I didn't even realize that it's on there. Yeah.
Firework Humans, Ignite 9 Entrepreneurial Instincts, Fuel Curiosity, Confidence, and Conviction.
Oh, so, I love that.
Yeah.
So the 9 instincts as I see them is the knowledge-seeking instinct. And I won't go into detail about all of them, but with knowledge-seeking, you know as well as I do that life is a continuous journey of knowledge. And the moment that you stop that and you just kind of comply and you stay in your lane and you're not continuing that education, you're not moving forward like you have the opportunity to.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really big one. Prove it to me instinct, whatever it takes instinct, try again, go out on a ledge, selling instinct. I think we all can be sellers. It's a matter of how we approach, even if we're an introvert, we have that instinct inside of us, evolving instinct and audacious dreamer instinct. So I kind of break all of these down. Well, I don't kind of, I do. I break all of these down. And as you can tell, I tend to talk a whole lot. So I had to really rein it in this book. Otherwise it'd have been like 1,000 pages with stories and examples in there. But I show how I apply that to my business life and my personal family life, and how that's just a really good blend, and how it's applicable even if you don't have children, starting out as a family unit. So I think we all have this opportunity to have this massive growth mindset. It's just what we're going to ignite inside of us to make that happen.
Definitely. And it makes me think, like, I think of kids, like, they're just curious beings, like, naturally curious, and they seek out knowledge. And that's part of what you can embrace with homeschooling so easily. And part of gets kind of squashed in our traditional schools, because might not fit into what we're studying right now. But I also think of employees with that curiosity or seeking of knowledge, and managers can get, or owners can get, intimidated by that somebody, like, you know, wants my job kind of thing, or wants to know what I do. And I always felt like, come learn what I do, like, I'll gladly give you my job and go do something else. And, you know, so it's partially that confidence that people need.
Well, I think
to be able to allow that curiosity and allow knowledge seeking to happen.
So a couple of things you just said, I agree with you on that. I think there's this misconception that when our child turns 5 and it's time to go to school, that their learning hat turns on. And from then on, we need to focus on the education and less on the encouragement of the play and the curiosity and creativity. See, our son, when we were deciding, hey, are we going to homeschool him? Or are we going to try something with him? The conversation really had no legs to go towards traditional education as far as putting him in a school, because his curiosity, his imagination is out of this world. Like, I could just see him going to school and them telling him, Jackson, you have to sit down. Jackson, you're not part of a wolf pack. Jackson, yep. You don't have a wife on Mars with 10 kids. Jackson, you're not, you don't work at a hot dog stand. You know, like all these things that he just believed and are part of his world, and they weren't harming him anyway. All they did was keep that going. And I think as adults, we lose that. And that's part of the reason that, you know, we don't reach our full potential is because we let that go. But I believe in letting them play, you know, without directives, without guidance. It's so important. It doesn't matter what age you are. As a family, we have these things called specs. I don't have mine in here at the moment. When we're on a meeting or something, we sit and play with these little magnet things. You know, always having something or going on. We play games throughout the day as a family. But with employees, you're right. You know, a lot of people hire. And they hire based on the person, if they can control them, they can keep them in their box, they can make sure that they don't step out of their bounds, they don't challenge their role or their position and try to take that. And when we hire the absolute opposite way. When we hire, we're looking for somebody who may not quite see all the skills that they currently have, how we could best fit them in our company. With the opportunity to grow, our mindset is that if you come up for review, you've been here 6 months, a year, and you're not moving forward and you're not working towards the next position in our company, then you're not the right fit. We want you to evolve. We want you to move up and grow and move into a better position. We want you to gain skills and knowledge and then eventually move on. If you have reached this massive potential and you've worked your way up, let's help you move on to the next great thing in your life. So I think it's how you approach hiring too from the start. It's so very important. I like to be in on the hiring process because I listen for things that other people might miss. I try to get to know the person as well as their qualifications.
Yeah.
So hiring for us, we have a lot of redundancy. I don't mind if two people can do the same job that a manager can do. That ensures that we don't have any issues and somebody else can move up. That's the cool thing also about us having multiple companies, and they're very synergistic with each other. Some people move to a different company in our group. Some people decide they're going to go on and build something on their own, and we help assist that. So we don't look at it as a scary thing. We look at it as an opportunity for growth and expansion.
Well, it sounds like it fits in with that growth mindset that you mentioned before, of you embrace that for yourself, for your kids, but also for your employees to, and that I would think helps your companies innovate and be cutting edge as well.
Oh, I think that's one of the key things for us. So my husband, he's kind of the creative and the visionary. Things that he is working on now for our companies are things that won't happen for another year or two. We've always been ahead of the game, ahead of the curve. He keeps us alive and fresh in that way. And I think for employees as well, it's very exciting because he's sort of this visionary. And then I bring my look into it. And next thing you know, it's like magic has happened, you know, and then everybody's excited and we're evolving. And I think that's one of the opportunities when we hire, they see that potential and they see that momentum. And so it's exciting to be a part of our team, whichever company you're a part of, because there's always that movement that's happening.
Very cool. So let's talk about, well, we talked about hiring a little bit, but what are some of your tips for hiring inspired, effective, and loyal employees for your companies?
So in most of our companies, we have it broken up by teams. There's different teams. So I look at what team we're hiring for and the people that are currently on that team. Because I'm always very mindful of who is the core foundation and who we've added to it. And it's like just when you're building a cake and you're adding on and you add on the decorations and the candle and everything, it all has to work together. So I'm always mindful of the people on that team. And I when I'm interviewing, I'm looking to see not only if they have skills that are required for that position, are they trainable? Are they coachable? Yeah. Are they willing to learn, or do they come in with bias to where they've been in this position before and they're not willing to try anything different? They're very set on what they already know. Are they going to blend and mesh well with the group that is there? Because they never want to put somebody in that's going to cause friction or problems in that group. Yeah. I think that's really important. I think a lot of people hire just based on skills, and they don't interview in a way to get to know the person, who they are, their background, their experiences outside of work, their hobbies and their goals. I'm always asking, you know, what are some things personally that you're hoping to do in your life? We encourage travel. We encourage experiences in our companies. Everybody right now is working remote. Some have chose to go back in office, but I think approaching it, not just you're going to be an employee for me, but you're going to be part of our team and our family. And, you know, I also let them know what they're getting into, what our expectations are, you know, what we're going to want from them.
Yep.
And we don't want somebody who's going to show up, put their head down, do their work and go home. So I think the communication from the very start is extremely important.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like that communication is key, laying out expectations for them.
It's so simple, but it really is so extremely important.
It really is. And I've worked with teams where the managers or owners are just terrified to say those kinds of things, that they'll, you know, well, they'll leave. And then what do I do? And it's like, but if they're not working well for you, why do you want them to stay?
And you don't own anybody. There's nothing you can do. If they're going to walk away, they're going to walk away. What I like to know is that when people walk away from a company that is in our portfolio, that they walk away with more knowledge. They've increased their skills. They may have learned something that they didn't know, and now they're going out into the world and they're going to try that. I like to know that they can call me for a reference, that they can lean on me for mentorship or support in the future. I'm good with that. I'd rather have employees that are working towards that. I'm always asking, what's your side hustle? What do you do outside of this?
Yeah.
You know, you're not a one trick pony. You've got other things that you can do, you know, explore that. And if it's not to make money, it's for personal growth. You know, what is that for you? So I think it's just a different approach. It's also retention. I mean, we have dynamic people on our team, and I think it's because all the way around they feel valued, and they know that we lead with generosity, and that we're not in it to just see what we can gain from them. It's what we can do as a team. So it's just a different approach.
Well, it sounds like a very holistic approach too, of, you know, that's healthy for the company, healthy for the employee, you know, like it just sounds like ideal, a good place to work. And that's what people should, you would think they're looking for, is a good place to work and be a part of. But I think that's unique in our workplaces and not what people are used to all of the time or much of the time.
Maybe if we've learned anything through this past 6-8 months, however long it's been, is that we have to rethink how we approach our engagement and interaction and the value we place on our team members, because it's all changed and we have to work together in a different way. So if you don't have that foundation and that sort of culture and vision of where you want to go, it's really hard now because we're not together in an office anymore. So it's a little harder to establish under these circumstances. So I think for us with remote working and how we are now, it wasn't as hard because we had that to begin with.
So I guess that makes me wonder, like, for you, do you see your team staying remote? Like, I'm hearing a lot of organizations are selling their buildings, they're going to go all remote, they're going to stay that way. But I think there is a piece that you miss when you're all remote. There's really cool things about being remote, for sure. But there's really cool things about being in person, too.
Well, sure, absolutely. So we have with multiple companies and yeah. and offices all over. And with that, they've been given the opportunity to come back in if they feel comfortable and safe, or they're given the opportunity to remain working remote. We have some offices where they just want to be together, especially yeah. creative teams, where they feel the need to, you know, there's it's that thing, being there together in person. It's the magic. And then there are some that, you know, their job, they already kind of felt like they were on an island, you know, yeah. they would socialize with the team and hang out and, you know, we'd have happy hour in office and things like that. But, you know, they're comfortable and they've now realized that they have this freedom. They get their work done depending on where they are. And they, you know, we get together for meetings, weekly meetings. One company does every morning. Some are in office, some via Zoom. So at this point, we've really left it up to them to decide. It didn't affect our workflow in any way. So it's what works best for them. Funny thing here in LA is that back in October of last year, we had several employees that were driving 2.5-3 hours to get to the office. Wow. So we had presented to them the option to work remote yeah. and kind of did it on a trial basis to see how well, if we got all of everything done, we're still productive. And it worked out great. By end of December, we had nobody in office. They were meeting up outside of it still because we yeah. did things like a bowling league together and, you know, ping pong tournament. It was still, we did a lot of that kind of stuff. So they were yeah. still getting together for those things. But we actually found that they were more productive. They were happier. They were more engaged because, you know, for the ones that were driving so far. So it was kind of a unique thing here in LA. So yeah. by the end of December, it was a ghost town in the office. And before COVID, we had decided, well, we don't really need that office here in yeah. LA because nobody's coming in anymore. But then like our facility in Phoenix for my company BrandLink, that's a 9,000, almost 10,000 square foot facility, can seat up to 90 people. Wow. So you have a lot of energy and yeah. creativity flowing in that type of environment. So I think people are excited to get back in and back in that feel of it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how companies make decisions about the future and what they need and how they want to work and how, and probably like yours, more flexible for some positions of, you don't have to come back if you don't want to come back.
Yeah.
If it's working.
Yeah. So I think obviously there are some companies that being in office, they need to be in office in order yeah. to do, if you look at service industry, I mean, so many people had no jobs because, you know, you're not cleaning offices anymore. You're not service, you know, gosh, everything here is just now starting to get to where you can actually go in places and do things. We're one of the last states to hop on board with that. But, you know, so many people suffered because they didn't have the option to work remote.
Yes,
which is definitely extremely challenging.
Definitely. So, and it's just going to be interesting to see how our world shifts and changes as we move forward. But so when does your book come out?
So I think we're aiming between May and July of next year, maybe nice. A little, I think we're going to get the ebook and the audio, and maybe some other things out beforehand to kind of yeah. get it out into the market and then, you know, launch. It's hard with a book to get it into places. They run on a pretty tight schedule. So they book that pretty far out. So yeah. I think the other options, getting that out there first, is going to be really nice. I'm excited.
Yeah.
It's a little scary. You know, you have this project you're working on, and I'm always telling people, don't attach emotion to business, you know, or things like that. And it's your words and it's your stories that you're choosing to share with people.
And
so that's a little daunting for me, but I'm really excited. I hope my hope for this is that it ignites things in people that they didn't understand were there. They didn't feel maybe they're inspired to approach raising their kiddos in a different way or how they interact with their employees. Like we were talking about earlier, you know, managers and business owners are scared about hiring, you know, they don't want people to challenge their position or challenge them as the owner. But this is encouraging you to find those people. You want those people that have that massive growth mindset and that, you know, just because you don't own a business doesn't mean you don't have that entrepreneurial mindset and that you can't think that way or have those instincts. And what I find fascinating is that we have a lot of employees that, I mean, they'd be phenomenal on their own and in a business, but they choose to work with us and in our walls and our environment. And they, what they bring is, I mean, it's so cool. It's so cool to witness and to have as part of your team. So it's just shifting how you look at that.
Yeah, definitely.
Is the key.
Definitely. And it sounds like your book will open people's eyes to the possibilities of what they can do.
I hope so. A girlfriend of mine, she's a teacher, and she said, this would be great for educators as well. And how they communicate not only to their students, but also to their team. And it's inspire each other, you know, to look at this. So I'm excited. I think I hope that the time I put into it is of value to people. That's the goal for me.
Yep, definitely. And one of the challenges of writing a book is that you don't know that. So people read your book and it impacts them, but you don't, unless they write a review or send you a note, like you don't know that. Just like if you speak at an event and something you said changes somebody or someone listens to this podcast and something you said catches them and impacts them. We just don't always know the ways that we've touched people. But I'm sure that it's going to have an impact on people.
The hope is always for me in doing a podcast or getting on an Instagram live or conversations. I place value on every conversation I have. It doesn't matter if I'm in a grocery store, at a restaurant. If somebody gives me pause or makes me stop and pay attention to them in a way and like, I feel so lucky that I just had that engagement with this person because they may not realize it because they're just checking me out at the grocery store. But the value of our brief conversation has left me feeling a certain way. And I carry that with me. And I understand that it doesn't matter where we are. We should always be open to have these interactions. I think with social media and especially now with everybody being at home or isolated, we're losing that connection. We have to keep that going. We have to keep, especially for our kiddos, you know, one of my girlfriends, her kids do Zoom. They're in elementary school and they're on Zoom for like 8 hours. They even do PE, you know, like, this is so bizarre to me that, you know, why can't they go outside and play for PE or can't they?
I know.
So it's like, they're like, yeah, but they're communicating. They're keeping that going. I'm like, really? Are they? You know, they're not allowed to talk. If they have to say something, they gotta raise their hand. They have the teachers constantly flashing these little things on the screen saying, don't interrupt. It's not your turn. You know, so really they're not. It's so frustrating.
We got this long list of the rules of Google Meet or Zoom and all the things you're not allowed to do. And I was so frustrated, you know, because it's like you're in my house and you're telling me what the rules are in my house.
Oh, yeah, no. You know,
the pets can't walk through the room. Your parent can't, you know, it's just on and on.
Oh, really?
I was like,
they tell you that?
Oh, it was terrible.
Man, but, Well, that's frustrating.
Yeah, so I think you're right. Like, we need to be having those conversations and connections with people in person, because what happens on social media especially is there's, like, even if it's neighbors, there's like a whole different attitude of,
like, yeah,
there can be such meanness.
Oh, I know. And people are so bold, you know, they feel empowered to say these things or have certain behaviors that they wouldn't otherwise have.
I know, if we were just having a conversation, they wouldn't be saying these things to me.
No, but you know, and I think that's part of our philosophy with building a company is we have this truth and transparency that we kind of live by and we let govern us. And so the way we would act in person or with an employee or a client or family member is how we are. It doesn't matter if we're behind a screen or not, you know, we're going to be true to that. And so, but I think now people, they just get so mean to each other. It's sort of disheartening, you know?
It's very disheartening. I live in a very small town, rural New Jersey, and people say, oh, your town is such a nice little town. But if you go on our Facebook community page and read what people are saying to each other, it's like, no, not really that nice a little town.
Oh.
Somebody will say, like, why are there fireworks at 10 o'clock at night? And all these people are like, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, goodness.
It's like a little innocent question, like, your neighbors, just be nice. And
but, exactly.
But it's just that screen in between them and the person. Like, they don't see the person on the other end.
No, there's that disconnect. Yeah. That's why I was speaking with a lady the other day, and she's like, well, how do we keep that going? I was like, well, sit with your kiddos and have them make a list of questions and start calling relatives, you know? Get on the phone rather than commenting on something they post on, you know, a social media platform. You know, actually make that connection. Let them know that you're still here and you want to talk. That even if, like with Jackson, it's what he's currently doing or something he's growing in his garden or whatever it is, so that they're still communicating and that they're using those communication skills. I find I interview a lot of, you know, younger adults, then they don't know how to communicate properly.
No.
It blows my mind, you know, and then even something as simple as asking, well, you know, what times are good to come in? Well, I don't know what times work. Well, make a decision.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to feed you everything. You got to make a decision. So it's frustrating.
My kids went to a charter school, kindergarten through eighth grade, that was an outdoor school. And I think that one of the things that they came out with solidly was communication and kind of solid in who they are as people.
That's good.
Yeah. And I felt like it was the most important thing to come out of school with, because they, you know, other people were worried about, you know, the reading level or the math level. And it was like all of that came and they got all of that. But when they went to the regular high school, now there's kids that don't know how to communicate.
No.
Don't know how to talk out a problem and resolve conflicts or talk about an issue.
They don't even have courage to raise their hand. And you're thinking, what happened?
Yep.
How did we get to this place? And then you have the other end where a best friend of mine, you know, she's teaching these kiddos and they won't turn in anything. And it's, you know, she's so good at walking them through and explaining things and setting them up for these really cool learning opportunities. And they won't do anything. You're like, what? You know, look at the gift you're being given. You have this person who's wants to change your life and set you up for greatness, you know, and they kind of crap on that. And it's like, I don't understand the mindset of young adults anymore. It's frustrating.
Definitely is. So let's end on something positive. So,
okay. I know. I feel like we're just chatting about all kinds of things. We could do this for a few hours here. Like, how do we even end this? I mean, because I feel like we barely scratched the surface.
I agree. Maybe
we'll have to chat again.
Definitely. Well, you'll have to come back when your book comes out for sure. So we can
I'd
go
love
through
to.
All nine of your principles and talk about it more. That would be wonderful.
Would we get like 4 or 5 hours at that point?
We can break it up into segments.
Our weekly session.
So let's just pull it together. Like some last tips for entrepreneurialness and parenting, and how they, like so a couple of tips for people on how to do it well. I think we've talked about it, but.
Okay. So, you know, if I'm looking at both and saying how to do both well, I would say be realistic with yourself first and foremost. Know, we try to manage everything else in our life, and we know what to expect from our employees and our children, but getting to know yourself and really how long you take to execute on something, what kind of environment you need, what you best thrive in. Understand that. So when you're approaching every other part of your life, you approach it from a place where you're super comfortable with yourself and your expectations and how you're gonna execute every day. I like to encourage people before they go to bed to take 10 minutes and make a list for the next day, so they don't wake up in a frazzled mess of, okay, well, what all do I have to get done today? Whether you're just a stay-at-home mom, you know, a homeschooling mom, a mom who runs a business, a mom who runs 10 businesses, you know, make yourself that list. And what is that Mark Twain quote about each? And the frog, you take that really daunting task, that big task, and you put it first and you nail it and you get it done, so that you're setting yourself up for success throughout the rest of the day. I would say, again, I'd say don't multitask your business and don't multitask your kids. You're not being fair to either one when you approach it that way. Do one thing at a time. The time management with how you approach it. If you're trying to break your time up between your business and your family life, being at home, be realistic. Watch who you give power to, who you give the time to. Be mindful of all of those things, because we can allow that to slip. And the next thing you know, you've accomplished nothing. With having your kids at home, whether you're doing distance learning or you've embraced homeschooling, I would say, allow yourself some mercy. There are going to be days that are fantastic and you feel like you're nailing it. And then there are going to be days when you completely fall apart. And my advice is to just stop, go for a walk, play with your kids, let it go, start again the next day. There's no harm in that, in admitting that. And I think if we can be realistic with ourselves in that way, then we're better for it. What else?
Well, and I think being kind to yourself. Like,
oh, yes. Yes. Just self-love is a big
space
thing.
To like not be perfect. And
yeah. Allow yourself to have those moments where you can fail and be okay with it. We're big on failure in our organizations and with our kids. We just own it. We evaluate it. We learn from it. And then we move on. We don't let it sit and fester. I think a lot of business owners let those failures fester as well as in the family unit. And it's a constant conversation. And you just got to shift away from that. I think people fear success as much as they fear failure. Yeah. And so, you know, kind of get right in your headspace and become the fearless leader of your life. Live intentionally. Don't put limitations on yourself, your employees, or your family members, and let them grow and thrive. And what a difference that makes.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So for people to follow up with you, be in touch with you, jessicamead.com is your website.
Yes.
And are there other places that they should connect with you, or is that the best place to go?
You know, I think that's a great place to connect with me. I am on Instagram. I do post a lot of stuff. It's a mix of personal and business. And if I feel inspired about something, or I, you know, have a thought and I want to get it out there, I'll post it there. So it's _ Jessica Mead _. And if you send me a message on there, I respond. I love to engage that way. I've met some incredible people, incredible women in business that way, which is really awesome. Always great. Loving to connect. So
I'll include the Instagram link in the show notes as well as your website. So if people want to follow up and connect with Jessica, please do. And I want to just thank you for being here. It's been great to have you.
Oh, yes. I really enjoyed this conversation. Did not feel like the normal podcast. It just felt like this great conversation. And we may not have even touched on the things that we had aimed to, but it felt right.
Well, good. Well, thank you. Have you picked up the Visionary Womenpreneurs Field Guide yet? It's filled with information to help you build a marketing system that becomes predictable and reliable for growing your business. Pick up the field guide today at visionarywomenpreneurs.com. Thanks for joining me today at Visionary Womenpreneurs Radio. I hope it was helpful to you in your journey as a visionary womanpreneur. And I hope that you'll join our community on Facebook, Visionary Womenpreneurs, and join the conversation. I look forward to seeing you on our next show. Make it a great day.